Hi, I'm Tim. I'm from Penn State University, and I'm going to talk about modeling hepatitis also, but unlike Jonathan's talk, I'm going to talk about hepatitis C, all right? And this is work I did while I was at Los Alamos with Harel Dahari and Alan Perlson. So just some background, there's about 3 million chronically infected people in the U.S. with hepatitis C. There's four types of hepatitis C that were mentioned, or you may hear about this: hepatitis A, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, and hepatitis Delta. There's about 3 million people in the U.S. with hepatitis C, about 20,000 new infections per year, and they're primarily transmitted by infection drug use, or injection drug use. When you get infected, about 75% of infections become chronic, 25% clear. 20% of chronic infections get cirrhosis, and 1 to 5% die from chronic liver disease eventually. There's several different substrains of hepatitis C, which is abbreviated HCV. I'm not going to talk too much about the different strains. In fact, on most of the biology here, there's probably people who know the details better than I do. The relevant piece is that we can treat hepatitis C. It's one of the few viral infections that we've developed effective treatments for. Treatment, until recently, has consisted of pegylated interferon alpha and ribavirin. The pegylation is attaching antifreeze to the interferon so that it stays in the body longer. And it works in 50% of patients. That's great for 50% of the people, not so good for the other 50% of people. And so that why it's 50% is an interesting issue. But there's been a lot of modeling done on hepatitis, just like there's been for HIV, not as much as in HIV. But the standard model is a within-host viral dynamics model, very similar to the HIV model. So there's a target cell population T, an infected cell population, and a free virus. And hepatocytes, which are the target cells, are immigrate at some rate just because there's spontaneous creation of hepatocytes from stem cells. And so this term is a little different than Jonathan's model. He had cure here. The source term S will serve as our influx. There's natural death of target cells, but then there's infection by virus, and that depends on treatment. And so the eta here is the effectiveness of one kind of treatment. Infected target cells enter the infected compartment, and they die at some rate. And they produce virus, and the rate of production of virus also depends on treatment, so epsilon is another treatment parameter, and virus is cleared at some rate. And you can use this nonlinear model, here's the Petri net of it, to fit data. So here's some data from real patients who are starting treatment, and the fit of the model. And we see two different patterns for treatment. We see a case where treatment doesn't cure infection, and so it plateaus out in these two. And then we see cases where it does cure infection. And we see in one case this biphasic response that's characteristic of HIV, with the first phase corresponding to reduction in virus production, and then the second phase corresponding to death of cells that are infected with the virus. They do clear. In this case, patients really are cured. Now, it may be difficult to judge for a given patient whether they've reached that point or not, and so there's always some situations where there's relapse because, in fact, treatment may have been stopped too early. But given that you treat long enough, you will clear. So I was saying, in most of the data, there's these two situations. There's this sort of fast viral clearance and then cell death phase. And so we get that pattern, and we get this pattern where things go flat, just to zoom in a little. But we also get, and I just noticed the time scale here, this is days, and so this fast time period happens about one day, and then over the course of 10 days we've seen constant, and when we're clearing we see a similar response over 10 days. But we also see this sometimes in patients. So no, I've changed the time scale. So rather than going to up to 15 days, I've pushed it out to 30 days. We have a patient who has a fast viral decline, and then it stops for about 10 days, doesn't move, and then it goes down, and this patient clears eventually. But this doesn't fit the model that we sort of presented at the beginning that I put up there. We can fit a slope here, we can fit a slope here, but the model doesn't explain this plateau phase. And this is potentially very important because it corresponds to a situation where you may think that the patient's not going to cure, even though they eventually do. And if you only look for 10 days, you're going to miss that. So the problem is trying to explain what's going on here. How do we extend the viral dynamics models to account for this? And what does that mean in terms of treatment? So Harel and I sort of came at this from different directions, although we were working with essentially the same model. And the conjecture is that there's vertical transmission essentially here, and that the homeostatic proliferation of hepatocytes is another component in this model. And this is another mode of transmission that's not accounted for. And if we do account for it, it may explain that delay. So this comes about because some of the evidence suggests that HCV infects all hepatocytes in the liver, which is strange because in most models, there's some fraction of the population that's less susceptible. And at the same time, the hepatocytes are known for their ability to proliferate. So I'm not quite sure how this was discovered, but if you go back to the Greek mythology of Prometheus, it's one of the key features is that his liver regrows in the course of a day, and that's really true. And so in mice experiments, you can cut out two-thirds of the liver, and the whole thing will grow back within the course of 2 days. So the liver has a tremendous ability to proliferate, and we think that that may have an important role in the dynamics here. But how do we test this? How do we sort of make something formal? So here's the modeling diagram of the model. I'll give you the equations on the next slide. But we've essentially got the same thing. We've got virus, we've got target cells, which are hepatocytes in this case, and we've got infect cells, hepatocytes infected with virus, which are infected cells. We have influx, a source term from stem cells creating new hepatocytes. We have death. We have death of infected cells. But we can also now, and this is the new piece, have proliferation of target cells and infected cells to maintain the populations potentially. And as Jonathan pointed out, it's reasonable for some under biological conditions to hypothesize that both infected cells and target cells that are not infected may proliferate homeostatically. Treatment, of course, can act to reduce transmission of the virus or production of the virus. So those are the red X's. And there's also this possibility of having cure of infected cells, which was also mentioned in Jonathan's talk. So the relative importance of cure versus a source isn't too important. So I'll probably just talk about there being a source, but there may be cure as well. So when we add homeostasis to the model, essentially we get this extra term here. It's just logistic growth of the target cell population. It's density dependent, but it occurs both in the target cells and the infected cells. Then we also have this cure term, which is spontaneously going from I to T. And I think everything else is the same as the previous model. So we've extended it just a little. It's really just adding a quadratic term. But we'd really like to understand what the consequences of this addition are for the dynamics of the model. Just so you know, many of these parameters are known to varying degrees. So we know how many cells are in the liver. So we can take T max, the maximum number of hepatocytes between 10 to the 6th and 10 to the 7th. We know how quickly virus is cleared in some ways, which has got to be, and these are very extreme bounds, but between 0.8 and 22. And some of these things, in particular hypotheses that we're posing, so the RT and the RI are the homeostatic proliferation rates, And we don't know these, particularly we don't know if infected cells actually proliferate, and so if this actually creates vertical transmission. But we'd like to explore the possibility that it does. So to do the mathematical analysis, this is all just going to be basically singular perturbations and stability analysis, but we really want to get interpretations out of the parameters. And one of the first assumptions that we make is that virus is going to be in quasi-steady state with the number of infected cells after the initial phase of treatment. And so on a slow time scale, V will be approximately 1 minus epsilon T over C, where epsilon is the effectiveness of treatment at stopping the production of virus. And on the fast time scale, we can get the dynamics if we need them, but we're going to be mostly looking at the slower time scale where we can neglect that. And then we do some dimensional analysis, and lo and behold, we reduce everything down to a system of two ordinary differential equations, which, if you carefully look at this, it's really just, at this point, a Locke-Volterra competition model. But the parameterization is important here. The parameters here are coming out of the original model, and there's only three of them. There's B, which is essentially the infection rate. So X is essentially the target cell population. Y is the infected cell population. So B is the infection process with the quasi-steady state assumption for virus for going from susceptible to infected. There's a D, which is the excess death rate of infected cells compared to susceptible cells. And there's the R, which is the proliferation rate of infected cells relative to susceptible cells, target cells. So these three parameters, in sort of simplest case, and I've thrown out for the moment the source term and the cure terms in the model. But these three parameters define our model. We can put some bounds on those parameters from what I gave you a moment ago. Not too big bounds, but we can figure out the bifurcation structure of this. And so, for instance, we may have, this is a phase plane, here's X susceptible and Y, the infected cells, and you may have an internal equilibrium in this model between infected cells and susceptible cells, where they converge, just like the normal Locke-Volterra equations. We can also have an equilibrium where all the cells become infected, that every single hepatocyte becomes infected, and that's because of the vertical transmission that allows that. And so we can, at that point, you're stuck because you don't have any healthy hepatocytes to restore, even if you want. But like I said, I'm ignoring the source term in this case. So the actual parameter space breaks down like this. So like I said, there's three parameters, the transmission rate B, the clearance rate D, and the homeostatic proliferation rate R. And you can think of this as varying the transmission rate. And so if you have R to be about 0.8, so this is fixed, then if D is less than R down here, as we increase the transmission rate, we go from having no infection to having part of the population infected to having all of the population infected. So if the transmission rate is large, all the population becomes infected. But if you have a larger D, you may get into the region where you get partial infection, and then you get damped oscillations in the diagram, in the dynamics, but you don't get total infection. It's only in this red line asymptotes out here to where the blue one is. So it's only when D is small, the excess death rate of the infected cells is small, that you can actually get total infection of the population. If infection with hepatitis C kills the cells very quickly, you're up in this top portion of the diagram, all right, and you'll never get total infection of your hepatocyte population. That was with an R value, though, of 0.8. What happens if we increase R to 2.5? So this is saying now that there's a disinhibition of the cell regulation cycle when cells are infected, and so they're proliferating faster than they would if they weren't infected. And if this is the case, you get those two red lines I had in the previous picture to cross. And so just like you can have in a regular Lakhovkara competition model, we have a region of bistability where either all infected cells are infected or no cells are infected. Those are the two attracting steady states. And as we increase our transmission rate, we're going to get essentially a backwards bifurcation, very similar to the one we had in one of the previous talks, where you don't see any increase until you cross this line here, and then all of a sudden it converges to having all cells infected. Again, if there's a very high excess death rate, though, of infected hepatocytes, that won't happen. We will never get total infection. And so this adding the proliferation, the homeostatic proliferation, creates a region of bistability potentially in the dynamics of hepatitis C in the liver. What does this mean? Well, to analyze a little farther, let's put in back in the immigration term and spontaneous cure term. So we have the introduction of susceptible hepatocytes in one form or another so that they never quite go extinct. So we never quite have total infection of the hepatocyte population, but we can have almost all of it infected because even if Q is non-zero, it's small, and similarly S is small compared to the other parameters in the system. Adding those two terms just sort of perturbs us from the classic Lotka-Volterra picture to something like this, where this corner here splits, and so we have a null cline that goes like this and a null cline that goes like that, and so we can never quite get out of the positive quadrant. This equilibrium is no longer biologically relevant, although it's mathematically relevant. So we've perturbed things a little, but not too much. Essentially, it behaves just like standard Lotka-Volterra. And the bifurcation diagram is essentially the same thing with some changes in shape. So the damped region of damped oscillations gets a little bigger. And this curve that separates bistability and total infection. There's a typo in that diagram. Should be total infection. But this curve gets a little change in shape, but essentially the same thing. So source terms haven't changed things too much. And we're going to add treatment now. So in the dimensionless model, treatment is only going to appear in front of the B term, and so treatment is reducing transmission. And the more effective transmission is, the smaller B is going to get. So the question is now, how does this drive the clearance dynamics of infection? It turns out that there's two thresholds for the efficiency of treatment. There's a partial efficiency threshold and a critical efficiency threshold. The partial efficiency threshold, it controls whether we can get off the total infection equilibrium or the near total infection equilibrium in the model. If our efficiency is below this, then treatment has basically no effect on the patient. Only for treatments above this can treatment reduce the viral load within the patient. Then there's a second threshold, which is obviously a higher efficiency, which is the cure threshold. And if treatment gets above this value in the conditions we just sort of calculate from the diagrams I put up a moment ago, then you cure the patient. So efficiencies above this theta C cure, efficiencies between theta C and theta P give some reduction in viral load, and efficiencies below theta P do not. But the course of treatment looks like this. And remember, this is under the quasi-steady state assumption for virus production. So we don't see that first steep decline in virus, but what we do see is this long plateau before a steep decay in the infected hepatocyte population. And we see a slow initial restoration of the healthy hepatocyte population, but it's exponential here, and then levels off that carrying capacity. So this patient clears, but they have a long delay before they clear. And this is similar to the type of thing I pointed out in that first picture. And we can take the full version of the model and fit it, and we can fit this delay in the model. We get a slow plateau in viral load and then a faster clearance. So this is great. So the homeostasis model explains the plateau. Why? So far, this is math. So the question is sort of, why would in adding homeostasis give us this plateau here before clearance? And there's two answers to that question. One is that because the healthy hepatocyte population is so small initially, it takes a long time to be restored. And it's fighting against the homeostatic proliferation of the infected cell population in the process. And the second, a bit more interesting mathematical explanation that's not really separable from these two, they're kind of related in terms of the structure of the model, is that there's a bottleneck that's created because of the bistability. So when you go from the bistable situation to the single clearance equilibrium, there's a fold bifurcation that happens, and near that, there's a bottleneck that happens in dynamics. And that bottleneck gives a very slow transient to the clearance process. So the first case, I said, was the small initial population. So before treatment, we've got a high, a Y, and an X is 0, so this is almost all cells are infected. And then we add treatment, the phase plane changes to this. There's now one stable equilibrium, so the dynamics will go down here. But we're starting out near this equilibrium that's got slow dynamics near it. So even though we're not actually having a negative number of cells, the dynamics are controlled by this equilibrium, and so there's a slow passage away from it initially before we get to the robust clearance state. And then the other case was that fold bifurcation I mentioned. So here are the two null clines. They don't cross, so there's no equilibria that appears, but they're very close to crossing. And the solution has to go down here between them. And as it goes down between them, it's a very slow process if they're close to each other. So we can do some asymptotic analysis of this type of situation. If you do the 1D analysis, it's sort of standard normal form equations. You have near that fold bifurcation in the scalar case, here R is our bifurcation condition. If this gets negative, we have two equilibria, but for positive, we have no equilibria. When it's this positive, we can look at the transient time for solutions to go past that point, and we do some asymptotic analysis of this integral, and we get a formula for the transit time asymptotically. And you can use this to get some approximations for the delay. And I dropped the slide here where I show what the delays are, but we can use that to calculate the delays we would see. And so the final analysis as a function of treatment. So we start out with no effective treatment. We're either going to have partial infection of the liver or total infection of the liver. As we increase treatment, depending on R, the trans homeostatic proliferation rate or vertical transmission rate, we'll either have partial clearance that goes over to total clearance. So this region over here is the region where we clear disease totally. If we start here, we go from partial clearance, total infection to some partial infection to total clearance, but if the dynamics end up in this region, we see a strong delay before clearance kicks in. There's also the possibility for a weak delay or no delay. And this region here is the biphasic dynamics that are traditional for hepatitis or for HIV. But then we also have a situation where we have bistability in clearance. And so increasing the efficiency up through here really doesn't change anything, even though the system's bistable. The patient could be cured here at this point, but because of the bistability and the small changes introduced by the drug, they're not cured. Only after they get across this line are they cured, and that's a region where they see strong delays if the efficiency gets up to that point. And so this is really important. This predicts that there's a situation where the patients could be cured if you gave them a big enough shock, but without a shock, they're not going to be cured. So here's the actual plots of the delays, and so you can calculate the delay in that plateau in this region. And I just want to mention that there's a lot of scientific work that's going on in this area. So for one, recently there's been a new family of drugs that have been developed for hepatitis C that act directly on proteins that are found in hepatitis C. And so Talaprevir is one of them, and so there's a lot of interest in this, and it's causing some reevaluation of the models. And then there's also some interest in genome-wide association studies, GWAS, which I gather are widely questioned in terms of their value recently, but they seem to have found a singular nucleoside polymorphism in interferon lambda 3 that's near IL-28B that gives you a threefold greater chance of clearing infection. So this is an ongoing area of scientific research where a lot of exciting stuff has happened in the last year. So just to the conclusions, this has been a very fast talk. I think I tried to pack too much into it. Apologize. But homeostatic proliferation of infected hepatocytes and the associated vertical transmission can, in theory, explain the delays we see in treatment. And this also suggests that there are patients for whom large shocks, in addition to treatment, might help clear infection if they need it. But this is all hypothesis. This is all modeling, sort of taking the data and doing some analysis on it. And so there's need for experiments to test this. And so as far as I'm aware, there's not been very much addressing this specific hypothesis yet. But it'd also be good to have some alternative hypothesis in terms of modeling, some other ideas that may explain that those plateaus that may have alternative implications for treatment. And so this is article that's available in SIAM Applied Math. And that's all I have to say. Thanks.